Good evening. It is just a little after 6 p.m. here on 6:02 p.m. to be exact, according to my clock that I have in front of me. Anyways, it's you are listening to WEFT Champagne 90.1 FM radio. My name is Ben. This is the program where we're at. Just to let you know that the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT Champagne, Prairie Air Incorporated, station management, the board of directors, or the WEFT associates. That song, that tune you heard was John Coltrane, On a Misty Night, from the album John Coltrane Sidesteps. Let's do some housekeeping, as I say, or public service announcements. If you have an old car, truck, motorcycle, or boat that you would like to get rid of, you can donate any old vehicle to Charitable Adult Rides and Services and designate WEFT to receive the proceeds from your gift. All you need is a clear title. Charitable Adult Rides and Services will pick it up and haul it away with no charge to you. Make arrangements on a website at careasy.com or call 855-500-RIDE. That's 855-500-7433. Remember to tell them that you want WEFT to receive the proceeds. Let's see what else. There is the there's always stuff happening at the Rose Bowl Tavern. Looking at their schedule for February. Looks like the Urbana Hoot Nanny is playing tonight. Tomorrow, New Orleans Jazz Machine. And a special guest, Dennis Stromat. U of I Jazz Trombone Ensemble on Wednesday, plus Trivia Night at 7:10 on Wednesday, then followed by Jazz Jam at 10 p.m. But if you always want to know what's going on at the Rose Bowl Tavern, you can go to the Rose Bowl in Urbana. You can go to www.rosebowltavern.com. I'm going to play. We have some pre-recorded public service announcements, and let me get those. So you're going to. This is just some pre-recorded service announcements that we like to let our listeners know about.
Programming at WEFT is brought to you in part by Elliott Counseling Group, who offers compassionate mental health care to individuals of all ages. Elliott Counseling Group serves Central Illinois with in-person and online sessions. More information is available at ElliottCounselingGroup.com. That's ELLIOTT Counseling Group, no punctuation or spaces.com, or by phone at 217-398-9066.
And now I'm going to play a rally that was held. This is a little over from a month ago. That was happened after the killing of Renee Good, who was shot by an ICE officer. So this is what you're about to hear. Just a reminder again that the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker. We do not necessarily represent those of WEFT Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, station management, the board of directors, or the WEFT associates. So yes, this is a rally that was held after the killing of Rene Goode in downtown Champaign.
We're out here today because there's masked militias terrorizing our streets, because ICE is kidnapping and deporting our neighbors. And we're here. Shame. And we're here because we're ready to put a stop to this terror.
Right.
How many folks here knew what a general strike was a year ago? Okay, that's actually pretty good. How many folks thought a general strike was possible a month ago? Less people. I like you though. Revolutionary optimism. How many people thought a nationwide shutdown was possible just a mere week ago? We're an optimistic crowd. That's great. That's how we win. But after seeing what happened today, thousands of students walking out of class, hundreds of middle schoolers walking out of class, high schoolers leaving, workers walking off the job, businesses shutting down. After seeing all that, how many people here today now know that a national general strike is inevitable? Feel the power that we have together when we come together as working people. The power to make society run. The power to shut society down and build it anew. The power to put an end to ICE terror. And don't you ever let anyone make you forget that fact. That when people get organized, there is nothing that can stop us. Now, this isn't just another protest. It's not just another national day of action, another one-day boycott, something like that, where we just go home and things continue on the same. No, my friends, today is a resurrection of our most powerful tactic as working people. And a resurrection of our fighting spirit across the country. The general strike is a tactic whose time has come. And by participating in this resurrection, we have all transformed ourselves. How many people invited a friend? How many people talked to a coworker today about this? Canvassed a business?
Yes!
Walked out of work? Walked out of school? Walked out of class?
Yes!
Did something that you've never done before?
Yes!
That's organizing, and that's people power, and that's how we are going to win. The ruling class, our enemies, the billionaires, they all thought that this was dead, that the tactic of the general strike was confined to the dustbin of history. They thought that this was impossible. They thought that the American people were too divided, too scared, too disorganized to stand up like this. Trump believed he could pick our communities up, our cities, one by one by one, with ICE terror tactics as he rolled out a police state. But today, we have risen as one across the country to prove him wrong. And we will not be pacified by the Trump administration changing the names or the faces of the ghouls leading this campaign of terror. We will not be pacified by the Democrats who cut deals to fund ICE with lies on their lips and smiles on their faces while they stab us in the back. And we will not be pacified or confused by this bogus continuing resolution that kicks the can on ICE funding and puts it back on the table 2 weeks from today. See, the ruling class wants to delay and switch up the names and the faces to pacify us and to distract us. But whether it's Homan or Bovino kidnapping our neighbors, the struggle is going to continue. Because the only way for this movement to stop is for them to stop. The only way for this movement to stop is for them to abolish ICE, to grant equal rights, and end mass deportations. The general strike has been unleashed into popular consciousness once more. And you all have unleashed it together this day with people all across the country.
Yes.
And I don't think I'll be forgetting about this tactic or this power that we have as working people when we come together anytime soon. Will you?
No.
So if they try and send ICE into another city, what do we say? We are ready for a fight. Rise up,
General Strike!
We are ready for a fight. Rise up, General Strike!
And if they try and deport our neighbors, what will we say?
Rise up, General Strike!
We are ready for a fight. Rise up,
General Strike!
We are ready for a fight. Rise up,
General Strike!
And if the ruling class ever forgets, even for a split second, this deep truth that we are reminding them of today, that they need us more than we need them, what will we say?
We are ready for a fight. Rise up, General Strike! We are ready for a fight. Rise up, General Strike! We are ready for a fight. Rise up, General Strike!
Also, I want to say thank you to everyone coming out to express solidarity and to come to share grief over the explicit murder and state-sponsored terrorist action against Renee Good, the 37-year-old legal observer killed by ICE thugs in Minneapolis at approximately 9:30 this morning.
Shame!
Shame!
ICE has already made the statement that she is a domestic terrorist that threatened bodily harm against ICE agents, but once again, And of course, this is not the first murder, but of course, earlier in Franklin Park, a defendant man himself was murdered by ICE, and in the very similar conditions where they said they were under threat by a person's vehicle, but the reality is, and all the footage shows, these people were trying to leave to avoid harm and persecution, and ICE sees that as the threat. An attack on their power is seen as a threat, and so they had to murder them. And today, she was shot 4 times in the head. So, this is both a celebration of life, a time to grieve, and a time to express some rage and protest. And we need to keep fighting. Because right now, unfortunately, a lot of what they're doing, it is about control. It's about obedience. And we cannot obey.
No!
Right.
We must not obey.
No. Right.
A woman reached out to me today. I don't know if you know. My name's Bill Boham. I'm running for Congress, but I'm not here to talk about it today. So, a woman reached out to me today, and she asked me what we would do if there was no election. And I said, we would keep organizing, and we would fight back in any way we can.
Yes!
That is true today, and that is true every day. Because we don't know if there will be an election. We don't, and honestly, we know that everyone in power, both Democrat and Republican, is failing us right now. So that's here what we're gonna stop. And so I just want to say thank you to everyone who's come out today, and let's just keep being here for each other, whatever it takes.
Yes.
Just to let you know that the Illinois primary for the 2026 midterms is March 17th. If you would like to see if you are registered to vote, you can go to champaignecountyclerk.com and check your if you're registered to vote. You can also because early voting is open now, and believe the Illinois primary is on March 17th, which is Tuesday. But if you would like to see if you're registering to vote or where your ballot, check your ballot, sample ballots, your voting location, you can go to champaignecountyclerk.com or just Google Champaign County Clerk and find out, you can request a vote by mail ballot, find a voting center near me or where the voting center near you, would be visit the online voter registration panel. It's also a number of other things you can do besides voting, but since, as I said, March 17th is the Illinois primary. There's also the League of Women Voters of Champaign County, lwvchampaigncounty.org is a website you can go to where you can look at candidate forums, who's running for certain positions. Obviously, you heard in that one of the rallies that you heard was Dylan Blaha, who I've had on, I've interviewed here on my show, on who's running for Congress in the Illinois District 13 congressional district. So he's going to be one of those, and that's going to be one of those candidates who's on the ballot here in Champaign, Urbana. Again, that's League of Women Voters of Champaign County. Very good resource place to check out about the election, the Illinois primary. That's lwvchampaigncounty.org. And then again, the Champaign County Clerk .com is the other very good tool resource. Just other thing I wanted to let you know about is the Champaign County Regional Planning Commission, ccrpc.org. They have a number of services, homeless prevention rent assistance, low-income home energy assistance, LIHEAP, mobile home initiative, senior services, summer cooling program, a number of, and there's also possible employment to jobs that they might have as well. Champaign County Regional Planning Commission, ccrpc.org. Okay. I'm going to play a pre-recorded program, news program. I believe this is the broadcast. Just a reminder that the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker and not necessarily represent those of WFT Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, station management, the board of directors, or the WFT associates. Also, if you're having a little trouble listening, I apologize. We are having a little bit of technical issues with our audio, but hopefully you're able to, So again, and if you would like to listen to us online, you can stream us online at weft.org. You can also, we also have the WEFT app at Google Play Store. I believe if you just search and Apple Store, 90.1 FM WFT. I think if you just put that in, it should come up. It's another way to listen to our show. You can also leave feedback on it. It's very cool. Now I'm going to play the latest broadcast with Brad Friedman for you all, which you're about to listen to now.
This guy has Trump derangement syndrome.
Not a complicated question.
I guess it is for you. Have you apologized to President Trump, all of you who participated in those impeachment hearings against Donald Trump?
You indicted.
Excuse me. I'm going to answer the question.
Answer my question.
No, I'm going to answer the question the way I want to answer the question. No,
and I told you about that, Attorney General, before you started.
You don't tell me
anything.
Yeah,
I did tell you because we saw what you did in the Senate.
Lawyer, not even a lawyer.
Arlen,
you don't get to reclaim time when you don't...
bigger than Watergate.
When I don't answer a question
this
the way
goes
you want.
Over.
Hypocrite. Was over $50,000. I don't know why you're laughing. We should be talking about, what does a Dow have to do with anything? That's what they just asked. Are you kidding?
But we're going to move back to you.
I bet we are.
Yes, of course, because you're here to testify.
Well, she seems nice.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
Oh, right.
I got the feeling that something ain't right. Scared in case I fall off my chair, and I'm wondering how I get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers
from Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles. This is the broadcast as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and on dozens of other fine affiliate stations on both the public airwaves and the internets around the country and the world, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, an all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Good Lord, thank you for joining us again. Welcome to the broadcast. Our friends Digby and Driftglass are standing by to join us momentarily. Desi Doyen is, as always, right here. Hello, Desiree.
Hello.
She will also have our latest Green News Report coming up a bit later on a very big day, a big, bad, and stupid one, frankly, as yes. the Trump administration enacts tell me if I'm describing this right, the mother of all climate science denialism, as foretold by Project 2025. Yes, they have killed the EPA's 2009 endangerment finding that confirmed greenhouse gases are in fact air pollutants, which mandates that the EPA regulate them under the Clean Air Act. But of course, if the EPA unfinds that finding, as the corrupt fossil fuel-funded Trump administration has now done, it theoretically allows them to roll back all of the climate-related regulations that we have in this country to curb dangerous fossil fuel emissions, to which climate experts in the bargain are vowing a rigorous opposition in the courts. Is that just about sum it up?
That is an excellent summary.
Thank you. We covered it in the issue in detail yesterday with the Center for Biological Diversity's decades-long climate champion, Dan Becker. If you missed that show, you can, of course, grab it for free thanks to our listener donors anytime at bradblog.com. But while that is just another disaster for the nation, and in this case the world, as foretold by Project 2025, and while the unspeakable damage and pain and destruction caused by the Trump regime continues and will continue for some time, it is difficult to ignore the signs that we see everywhere now of an administration and a presidency that was supposed to be a political movement for the ages. Instead, it is falling apart before our eyes, barely 1 year out of the gate. Just by way of a few examples, 2 weeks ago in a special election in a deep red district won by Donald Trump in 2024 by 17 points, a Democratic candidate defeated his Republican opponent by 14 points to flip a state Senate seat deep in the heart of Trump country with a 31-point swing toward the Democrats since 2024. That was 2 weeks ago. Last week, a Democrat in a Louisiana state House district won by 13 points back in 2024, defeated her Republican opponent in a state House race by double digits for a 37-point swing for the Democrats. And now, this week, on Tuesday, a Republican won a special election in a state House district in an exceptionally Trumpy area of Oklahoma, this on Tuesday, to represent Oklahoma House District 35. But the final results showed that the Democrats, well, they made very significant inroads in one of the nation's reddest states with a 30-point overperformance by the Democratic candidate as compared to Trump's win in the district in 2024. Democrats still lost, but they did 30 points better than they did just over 1 year ago in deep red Republican Oklahoma. That after Republicans were forced to outspend the Democrats by 4-1 to hold on to that seat. None of that is good news for Trump or his party, it seems to me, as the midterm elections near. On Thursday morning, a federal judge ruled that the Trump administration must facilitate the return to the U.S. of alleged Venezuelan gang members who were unlawfully deported to a maximum security torture prison in El Salvador last March after Donald Trump unlawfully invoked the centuries-old Alien Enemies Act to expel them from the U.S. unlawfully. Chief U.S. District Judge James Boasberg ordered the administration to pay for airfare and provide documents to facilitate travel for any of the 137 deported men who are currently outside Venezuela. That ruling came, as Judge Boasberg said in a stunning ruling, that while the court had, quote, offered the government the opportunity to propose steps that would facilitate hearings with the defendants remotely, he said apparently not interested in this process. The government's response essentially told the court to pound sand, unquote. While it amounts to another legal loss in court for Trump's federal government, the judge did emphasize that any deportees who do choose to return would likely be taken into custody upon arrival, which will likely limit the number who take up that offer. So victory for the rule of law, which is good, but ongoing pain nonetheless for the victims of a vindictive, lawless, out-of-control administration. An administration, however, that is thankfully absolutely inept in their evil efforts. As you've likely heard earlier this week, a grand jury in D.C. refused to indict any of the six Democratic lawmakers, two U.S. senators, four House members, all veterans of armed forces or intelligence agencies who dared to remind active duty service members that they have a duty to refuse unlawful orders. It used to be wildly rare that grand juries would reject indictments brought to them by prosecutors, but it has become really just the course of business these days, it seems, for many of those grand juries, rejecting the administration's worst weaponization efforts to lash out against their perceived political foes. But the politicized attempt to indict six sitting Democratic members of Congress was not only rejected by the grand jury, but former Fox News host turned U.S. attorney Jeanine Pirro's case was unanimously rejected by grand jurors, according to NBC News Today. To secure an indictment, Pirro needed only the votes of 12 grand jurors out of the 16 to 23 that typically make up a grand jury. But apparently, she got zero. Zero grand jurors voted to play along with the effort. And on Thursday morning, a federal judge blocked, for now, the outrageous effort by former Fox News host turned defense secretary Pete Hegseth to demote retired U.S. Navy captain and astronaut turned U.S. senator from Arizona Mark Kelly due to his participation in that completely lawful video. Another loss for the administration. And speaking of Congress, where Democrats are still blocking an annual funding bill for DHS, ICE, and the Customs and Border Protection Agency without putting in place serious guardrails to prevent the worst of the abuses by the Trump immigration secret police goons. Well, fallout continues from Wednesday's embarrassing appearance by screeching harpy slash Trump cultist slash U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi, whose refusal to answer any questions about the DOJ's unlawful cover-up of the legally mandated required release of the Epstein files has even received blowback from now top MAGA influencers, some of whom are calling for her to step down after the disastrous performance before the U.S. House Judiciary Committee on Wednesday. A flurry of right-wing figures actually seemed to turn on Bondi after her wild meltdown in front of Congress when, according to the Daily Beast, Bondi spiraled in her seat, pointing and yelling at Democratic members, accusing them of Trump derangement syndrome, and refused to answer questions as Epstein's shocked victims watched from the gallery. The bizarre spectacle, they note, prompted condemnation across the board, including among a number of Trump supporters. A visibly stunned Republican Congressman Thomas Massey told reporters after the shouting match she didn't answer anything. She came here ready to talk about the Dow Jones and the NASDAQ, which seems kind of crazy to me. Conservative radio host Eric Erickson said Bondi, quote, should be fired or resign, before adding, quote, but neither will happen, which is another reason the Democrats are going to have a good election year this year, he said. Tim Pool, the prominent pro-Trump commentator and podcaster, during an episode of his Timcast, declared, quote, "I was about to say that I think she's done a decent job, but I can't. It's just, I can't say it," he said. "I think they've miserably handled the Epstein files." So, yes, the worms continue to turn, and they are turning today as well, it seems, in Minnesota, in what appears to be very good news, even if also accompanied by ongoing pain for far too many. As the Trump administration announces they plan to phase out all federal immigration agents in Minnesota. Hopefully, as the Minneapolis Star Tribune describes it, bringing an end in sight to what's been described as the largest immigration enforcement deployment in U.S. history. The immigration operations have upended the state. The administration first deployed agents to Minnesota back in December and sent more in January. The operations prompted protests and criticism in the aftermath of the fatal shooting by federal agents of Renee Good and Alex Pretty, both U.S. citizens who died in service of trying to help and protect their neighbors. Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, in a press conference on Thursday, said that, quote, "Over the past 6 weeks, the state of Minnesota and the people of this great state have endured an unprecedented invasion. We've been through natural disasters. We've been through COVID," he said, "but this is something I don't think any state has ever experienced. They left us with deep damage, generational trauma," he said, of the federal operation. "They left us with economic ruin in some cases."
No matter where you come from, we believe in those words. Give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to be breathe free. This is a place you can breathe free. And my message to you is, the majority of Minnesotans and Americans stand on your side. They stand on the side that immigration is the core of who we are and that human decency. So as we go on this long road to recovery, it's going to be hard for many of you to get back the trust to be able to go out again without fear you're going to be asked for your papers, or to be singled out because of how you look. We in here in Minnesota have always made that clear, and I will attest that's why we were the target of this, because we are a successful multiracial, multicultural state that has one of the highest standards of living, that values our people and understands the people standing behind us are making that happen. So it's gonna be a long road, but I think you saw, and I'll say it again, Minnesotans are decent, caring, loving neighbors, and they're also some of the toughest damn people you'll ever find, and we're in this as long as it takes.
Democratic U.S. Senator from Minnesota, Amy Klobuchar, echoed those words in her own statement, noting correctly that, quote, "Minnesotans stood together, stared down ICE, and never blinked. Our state has shown the world how to protect our democracy and take care of our neighbors. ICE withdrawing from Minnesota is just the beginning," she said. "We need accountability for the lives lost and the extraordinary abuses of power at the hands of ICE agents, and we must see a complete overhaul of the agency." Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey struck an optimistic tone in a statement to the Star Tribune, saying, quote, "They thought they could break us, but a love for our neighbors and a resolve to endure can outlast any occupation. These patriots of Minneapolis are showing that it's not just about resistance. Standing with our neighbors is deeply American." That, even as Frey observed, that the occupation has been, quote, "catastrophic for our neighbors and businesses. And now," he said, "it's time for a great comeback." Indeed, the people of Minneapolis and elsewhere across the state have offered, I think, a model for all of us as we celebrate Trump's goons supposedly leaving the Twin Cities region over the coming weeks, even as they no doubt will rear their ugly, masked, unlawful, un-American faces in other great American cities soon, where I think, I hope, at least, they will be similarly loathed and resisted. Just over 1 year into his second presidency, according to Axios, Donald Trump has become so politically toxic that voters now say Joe Biden whose unpopularity forced him into early retirement, did a better job as president, according to not one, not two, but now three new polls. An ominous trend, observes Crooks and Liars' Susie Madrick, for a president who's done everything he can to erase Joe Biden's positive legacy. She cites the three polls. Harvard Caps Harris found that 51% of registered voters say Trump is doing a worse job than Biden, compared with 49 who say he's doing better. The far right wing, very Trump friendly Rasmussen reports, is fending off MAGA criticism today, notes Madrick, after finding that 48% of likely voters say Biden did a better job as president compared with just 40% who chose Trump in the Rasmussen report. The reasonably centrist pollsters of YouGov Economist found that 46% of U.S. adults say Trump is doing a worse job than Joe Biden compared with 40 who say he's doing better. In story after story today, Donald Trump and his administration seem to be falling apart. That does not mean they are finished with the extraordinary damage and pain they're causing, not by a long shot. In fact, the more that things fall apart for them, the more that Trump and his followers are likely to lash out in stupid and dangerous ways. But the more that they lash out in stupid ways, the more they also fail. And the more their coalition continues to fall apart as we head toward this year's critical midterm elections, when at least some legislative breaks may finally begin to be applied to what I hope, though I don't know for sure, is an ahistoric aberration in this country. Even as many of us still dwelling in the fact-based, reality-based community remained stunned to realize just how many bigoted, sexist, racist people that there are in this country and how many others are so easily fooled into going along with their corrupt anti-American program. Joining us now are our old longtime blogger friends, yes, from the reality-based community, the great Heather Digby Parton of Salon and Digby's Hullabaloo, and the no less great man known simply as Driftglass, co-host of the twice-weekly Professional Left podcast. Welcome back to both of you guys.
Thank you, Brad.
Good to be here.
All right. We will talk about some specific stories in the week's this week's news as time allows. But I kind of want to start with the broader picture to all of this at this point. Heather, I'll start with you, because after I compiled my opening segment there, I stopped by Salon to check out your column today, which comes from a slightly different news hook. But it kind of seems to end in a very similar place as my monologue there, I guess, somewhat hopeful. I know that some are not nearly as sanguine about all of this as I think I feel today. And we'll talk a little bit more about it. But you seem to come to a similar conclusion in your piece headlined, "This Isn't Trump's Golden Age, It's Ours," arguing that there is reason for hope right now. Really? How so, as you see it?
Well, it just seems to me that, you know, all of the things that you say, it's overwhelming. And any of those of you in the audience who are paying close attention know how overwhelming it is. And everybody here in this program knows how overwhelming it is. But at the same time, you know, I do see, and I'm frankly kind of surprised. I mean, just you can start off with the polling and see that everybody feels pessimistic and that, you know, that you've got all this, you know, tremendous angst over what's going on. And people are saying it. I just saw a new poll today about how young men who voted in rather large numbers for Donald Trump have all gone in the opposite direction. And they're very upset about the economy and about immigration and all of this stuff. People are aware, and I think that this is good. People have awakened to what's going on. But when you look at what's happened in Minneapolis and in other cities around the country, you see that people aren't just taking this lying down. I was mostly, you know, sort of shocked over the weekend to see that these Olympic athletes over in Milan were just, you know, the stuff they were saying. And of course, the right wing went crazy when they heard them saying anything other than all hail Donald Trump. But what they were saying was, you know, I'm not here to support everything that's going on in my country. I believe in love, not hate. I believe in unity and diversity and all that stuff. It was very kind of anodyne, kind of all-American statements, things that people used to think were just common sense, you know, common decency.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the Bad Bunny thing that happened at the Super Bowl. Similarly, you know, people really liked it. And his message was that it was unity. And yes, he spoke in Spanish, but geez, something like 50 million people in America speak Spanish. Half the world speaks Spanish. You know, it's second only to Mandarin, to, you know, Chinese language,
right,
as far as how many people speak it. So all this kind of inclusivity and this idea of neighbors coming up for neighbors. You listen to Tim Walz and his message, which is that, you know, we're tough, but we care. And you know, and my ending, after I went through all of that and was looking at all this stuff that was happening, coming from the people up, I'm going, well, you know, Trump likes to talk about a golden age. It's his favorite thing, and how he's, you know, slapping gold all over everything to sort of manifest it. The truth is that it's possible that what this has done is awaken the American public,
yes,
to its own ideals, its own values. And maybe at the end of the day, I mean, I hate to sound Pollyanna-ish here, but maybe somehow or another, it's going to end up being the catalyst,
yep,
for a different kind of golden age, not the kind that he's talking about, but the kind that we've all been, you know, craving for many, many years. So that's where I came out. I mean,
it was actually very similar to where I came out, as you can tell. I mean, it's not to say that things are wonderful, but all of the pieces are there, you know, showing not only him losing in his project, in his overall project in every way, shape, and form, but people understanding that what his project is a bad one. It's things that people don't like. That said, Driftglass, I've got a friend that I've been going back and forth with via email for some time who was very troubled, understandably, by the argument that Trump and his administration and his MAGA coalition is falling apart. Earlier this week, I posted a show to bradblog.com with the headline, quote, Trump's presidency now about little more than racism, corruption, culture war nonsense. To which my friend replied that a more accurate headline would have been, quote, Trump regime about little more than self-enrichment, ethnic cleansing of the U.S., destroying government, destroying international order to the benefit of Russia, exercising raw power so as to permanently entrench the GOP, and transferring wealth to the already rich, which is hard to disagree with, if a bit ungainly for a headline. But he argues that we are now living in a dictatorship, and that the arguments about Trump failing, etc., are at best premature. They're simply not borne out by what is actually going on right now. You got any thoughts on that? And feel free to take his side on that, as that would probably make better radio anyway. So,
well, can I agree with both of you?
Oh, well, that's an easy way out, isn't it?
I'm all about this. I'm a centrist. Yes. I believe in them. I'm an independent, Brad.
You're both sidesing it, are you?
Okay. Hell yeah.
Okay.
I think there's a lot of merit to say that today, as of this minute, your friend is correct. All of those incredibly damaging things are happening. The Trump administration is now just reduced to looting the place as fast as they can and lying about it. On the other hand, if you're winning or you're confident, you're not rolling troops into states and trying to disrupt their elections.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not sending a shrieking moron to Congress with a burn book to insult Democrats. You only do that to make sure that your tiny, bigoted, idiot base stays on side, because you're down to 38%, 40%, whatever it is. And, you know, there's a great, throughout all of human history, we want to be able to see the future. We want to be able to predict the future. And, of course, we can't. But what we can do, the best we've got, are our gut instinct about what losing looks like and the poll numbers that Digby talked about, including the ones about young men. If you're losing that many supporters and that much oomph among that many people, the future doesn't look good for you. And the minute Democrats have any hand on any lever of power anywhere, things are going to get very, very bad for the Trump administration. because then they can hold hearings and they can subpoena people. I mean, you know, Comer talking about dragging Bill Clinton in front of his stupid committee, which would be hilarious. I would love to see Bill and Hillary just dance circles around this idiot. That sets the precedent that you get to subpoena presidents and former presidents and force them to sit in front of a hearing in public and answer questions, which is not going to make Donald Trump very happy because that means it applies to him too.
Right.
So I'm waiting for the midterms. I'm looking at all the data I can. I'm looking at all those midterm elections. I'm looking at how my own congressperson, Nikki Baczynski, is running this time. 4 years ago, she ran as a farm bill, sensible gun legislation, let's get her done, purple state Democrat. Now she's running on impeach Kristi Noem and slap some, you know, mandatory recusal for the Supreme Court and get rid of Citizens United. And so I'm relying on the political instincts of people who are actually running for office to tell me through their actions what they see among their voters. And I know this, Democratic primary voters in this little flyover area of ours that nobody pays attention to won't tolerate anything less than her doing that. And that tells me that one side is fired up and looking for big wins, and the other side feels dispirited and awful. And Trump is giving them nothing. He's giving them nothing to hang their hopes on, nothing to hope for. He's just wrecking it, and his people don't know how to do anything other than be awful.
Well, and
the recipe for winning.
And why aren't they responding to that? Why are Republicans in Congress still seemingly so out of step with the country? I mean, are they that afraid of Donald Trump? In other words, you know, most do not seem at least to be running scared of what even the Rasmussen poll, for cripe's sake, seems to be trying to tell them. Don't they realize they are headed for ruin here? Do they have something else up their sleeve? Or do you expect that any of that is going to change between now and November as they start to realize they're in big trouble, which I don't know why they don't realize that already?
Well, I think I've mentioned this on this program before. This reminds me of the Tom DeLay era, when a lunatic, right-wing, dangerous man had control over the genitalia, if you will, of the Republican Party. And they were terrified because if you jump too soon, he'd kill you. If you jump too late, you're doomed. And that's where they are right now. They dare not cross Trump. They dare not cross any of the people that can hurt them. But on the other hand, they very clearly understand that if they don't do something, if they don't pick some fight somewhere, if they don't distinguish themselves from him somehow, they're going to win all the, you know, R plus million districts out there. But the rest of them are in trouble. And then they're in the minority. And then there's nothing for them. Mm-hmm. So I think they're just sweating this out, going, you know, I think there's an awful lot of physical threats out there too.
Mm.
I think there are people who are terrified that if they cross him, someone's going to come to their door in the dark of night and threaten them or threaten their family. And you just hear that kind of terror in their voices when they talk about how wonderful Trump is and how great everything is.
At least until after the primaries.
Yeah, I think that the assassination of Minnesota lawmaker Melissa Hortman had a very, very scary effect for many of them, but they won't talk about it and they won't do anything until they're safe and free after the primaries.
Could I just add one thing too? Yeah. There are a number of them, I don't know how many of them, who are also rank craven opportunists.
Yes.
Who are making a lot of money. There's all kinds of, I mean, the amount of corruption going on in the Republican Party and in the administration is absolutely astonishing. And I think plenty of them are just saying, hey, I just got to hang in here, got to do what I need to do, got to ride the, you know, ride the wave here and make my money and get out.
Mm.
And I think that there are quite a few of them who are on that road and think that they can come out of this ahead financially, if nothing else.
By staying on the train, even if they have to take it over the cliff. essentially.
Yeah, well, you know, they'll have their money in the bank when that happens. You know, they'll be all right.
And there's always wingnut welfare waiting for you if you don't cross the Donald Trump, who's controlling that welfare these days. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back and talk about, the Epstein files. I understand that's a thing lately.
I've heard of them, yeah.
What? Yeah, tell me more.
And something. No, I'm hoping you'll tell me more. That and some other stuff, probably, as time allows, right here on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial.
The broadcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Welcome back. It's the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. We are here with, of course, our special guests, Heather Digby Parton and the great Driftglass, trying to make sense of it all the day or so after, what's her name? Attorney General Pam Bondi. Kind of crazy what happened there in the U.S. House Judiciary Committee on Wednesday as she refused to answer pretty much anything at all regarding the Epstein files and the administration's cover-up of their legally mandated release. Guys, we don't talk a lot about the Epstein affair on this program very much, figuring everyone else in the world is talking about it and so much is happening and moving so quickly. So I do welcome your thoughts here. Let me start with Digby. What have you learned that you didn't previously know or fully understand or appreciate about the Jeffrey Epstein case, either from the material that's been disclosed in the files or from the way that the administration has handled their release and the obvious the cover-up there? What have you learned?
Well, I have learned that the idea of this elite group of pedophiles that the right has been peddling all these years, there was more than a little element of truth in it. And the fact that all these people, it was different than what they said, of course. I mean, I'm not endorsing QAnon or anything. But what we've seen in this release is just this endless, endless list of elite people in our society across the board that were affiliated with this guy and that knew him and that were in touch with him and were hanging out with him and with each other. I mean, this is, you know, I've never been invited to that party. I don't know about you. Thank God. Not that I would go.
No comment.
But, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. But, you know, this is really astonishing to me. But if I could just say one thing about the hearing that we heard was Pam Bondi, who truly is a, you know, shrieking harpy, is really mild.
I was being generous.
You're being very polite. You're like that.
Yeah.
But you know, she's really a reprehensible human being. And the worst moment for her, to me, and there were many of them. Well, first of all, she called Jamie Raskin, a constitutional scholar who went to Harvard, a washed-up lawyer, and she, you know, and she went to Stetson University of Law. Just FYI, Stetson University of Law. That's where she went. Raskin, of course, went to Harvard and was a constitutional law professor, but he's a washed-up lawyer. But the worst thing she did was when asked if she would, you know, turn around and apologize to the survivors, the Epstein survivors, who were seated behind her, quietly observing the whole thing. She would turn around and apologize for what they had been through and what they were going through. It would have been the easiest thing in the world for her to do that, to just go, yes, of course, and turn around and go, I'm very, you know, very sorry for everything you went through. We're doing our best to try and, you know, deal with it. And, you know, we thank you for your, you know, your perseverance, et cetera, et cetera. Anybody could have done that. And it wouldn't have had any effect on all the lies and everything they've told. She couldn't do it. She said she refused to turn around and look at them. And instead, she said, to the person who was questioning her, which was Pramila Jayapal, said, I refuse to get down in the gutter with her, with her, your theatrics.
Yeah.
I'm going to end that right there. Just a reminder that the views and opinions expressed in there, so does the speaker not necessarily represent those of WFT Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, Station Management, the Board of Directors, or the WEFT Associates. Thank you so much for listening to, here on where we're at, here on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM radio. Of course, listen to us 24/7 on WEFT.org and on our app. WFT, which I think is, you could just go to WFT 90.1 FM on Google Play Store and Apple Store. But that wraps it up here on, here, coming up here, it will be, in a little bit, will be, Radio Theater. I'm going to play, another John Coltrane song from, John Coltrane tenor saxophone album. The tune is bass blues. So, but please keep listening though to us here on WEFT 90.1 FM radio.